here at WNEW-FM in New York, where he belongs. Good evening.
Hello, Dennis Elsis. How are you? How's your face? How's your nose?
Thank you for coming here.
It was my pleasure, Dennis. I've heard so much about you, mainly from your mother, who works in Bloomingdale's. I didn't make that up, folks. His mother really works in Bloomingdale's. You can catch her in jewelry. Am I right or wrong?
This is true.
This is true.
This is true.
She's a great lady. My mother is now down in Miami Beach, Florida, the new home of my people. They are quickly leaving Israel because of problems and settling in Miami. Every day, new shiploads of six-pointers are heading down. No, seriously, my mother is 82, and she told me the other day, she said, getting a little fed up with the beach. I think I'm going to head north. I said, where? What? She said, Hallandale. I said, what? Where is that? She said, it's about 11 miles up, you know, on the way to Fort Lauderdale. I love the Jews. They're so short. You know what I mean, Dennis?
Listen, we got you here because you got a record out. I mean, Mel Brooks' greatest hits, High Anxiety, right? All of the
yeah, it's a strange, you know, it all happened because Joe Smith, an incredibly short Jew, he is really short, who is a wine connoisseur. Is that what you call somebody who lays in the gutter, you know, with things running from him? Anyway, Joe Smith, who's a wonderful person, said unto me, Joe Smith is the president of Asylum Records, on which I made my debut as a singing star. Let's face it, I'm very big now in Vegas. I mean, I get ringside tables because, I mean, it's Dean, Frank, and Mel. You know, it's Big Mel. Anyway, Joe said, when we did High Anxiety as a film, and he heard the score, he said, I've got a great idea. Let us do a soundtrack of High Anxiety on side one, and then on the flip side.
Flip.
We can do the greatest hits from Mel Brooks Pictures. We'll do Springtime for Hitler. We'll do Lily von Stupp, Madeleine Kahn, singing I'm Tired. We'll do The French Mistake. You know, there's a song in this album called The French Mistake?
Yes.
You know, it's from Blazing Saddles. When Dom DeLuise and the 50 Boy Dancers they're very busy. And then the Cowboys run in, you know, and they mix it up. There's a lot of trouble. The number they are doing goes like this. Throw out your hands, stick out your tush, hands on your hips, give them a push. You'll be surprised you're doing the French Mistake. Voila. Now, this is a number that I wrote late at night. The French Mistake, you can get it on the album. Somebody asked me, whatever happened to that? I said, look, the best music is on the backside of an album. So, anyway, Joe, it was Joe's idea. I did it for kicks, and voila! I mean, we have an album that is being received rather well on the coast. That's New Guinea, the coast. But in America, it's moving along very nicely too. And so that's the story of it. And there are things that I seriously, for a moment, if I may wax seriously, I love John Morris. John Morris is a composer. He scored the producers, and since then has scored every single film that I've made. John Morris is a very richly talented composer. And so the best of his music is now condensed and compiled and collected on this album. I'm very proud to present it to the world.
Well, of course, and this also has your singing debut.
Absolument, bien sûr.
I think really one of the highlights in the film is when you're in...
One of the highlights is on top of the Empire State. It's it's red, it warns airplanes, it's the highest light in NY, in Gotham. Yes, talk, Dennis, Elsis. So what else is new? I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. Please forgive me.
One of the highlights of the film is when you are... playing a psychiatrist for the very few people that haven't seen the film, and you've gone to the meeting of the American Psychiatric Association.
Yes,
in San Francisco, the
Hyatt Regency. Yes, Hyatt Regency. the open lobby with the rooms all around, a big open lobby.
And you are down in the cocktail lounge talking with Madeleine Kahn. And her father is...
Arthur Brisbane, the industrialist who has been stolen away and being held for a lot of money at the Psychoneurotic Institute for the very, very nervous.
And it is your opportunity to finally get a hold of a microphone, and you're sitting at the cocktail piano and so on and so forth, and this wonderful moment comes out.
High anxiety whenever you're near. High anxiety, it's you that I fear. My heart's afraid to fly, it's crashed before. But then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar. Once more, high anxiety, it's always the same. Anxiety, it's you that I blame. It's very clear to me, I've got to give in. My anxiety. And remember, folks, be good to your parents. They've been good to you. You win.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. And I like you under my skin.
Not bad, no Mel Brooks, but not bad. He has a kind of a mellow kind of antique feeling. Very nice, very nice. As a matter of fact, if truth be told, ladies and Jews, this is Mel Brooks, so we can't blame this on Dennis. Frank Sinatra is my vocal god. I worship his timing, his phrasing. But more than that, that inexplicable feel. The thing that gives you the goosebump, the magic. I mean, he feels there's a strange chemistry when he says, "I'd sacrifice anything, come what." I mean, it's just. I mean, he's just nobody can. He waits and then jumps in. You know, a lot of people sing on the beat. I was a drummer. I worked in the mountains, and that's where I fell in love with Frank. It's timing. You know that joke. There's a wonderful joke going around now for drummers and musicians, et cetera, and comics. It goes like this: one comic says to another, "What is the most timing?" The other one says, and you know the guy's a loser. You know he didn't wait. He didn't have what we call timing. But Frank is. It's impeccable. His timing has always been impeccable.
Well, every time I hear high anxiety, and especially in the middle where you kind of break, you do a break.
Well, I'm doing Frank. When I think of Crosby, when I was a little kid and I heard Crosby, when I was a teenager and he was singing stuff like Empty Saddles in the Old Corral, I said, what was the fuss? What are they making a fuss about this groaner? And then sometime in my 20s, somebody played Georgia Brown when Crosby was like 23, you know? Oh, Brown! I said, oh, oi, good. And then he was a great tenor. He was a great American tenor. I caught him. I mean, he was a basso profundo when I caught him. I mean, his voice got lower and lower. But I mean, he would do like Dancing in the Dark. You know, Dancing in the Dark is the most dangerous song for an elderly Jew in the Borscht Belt, in the mountains, you know, rocking on a porch after eating vegetables and sour cream. Dancing in the Dark is dangerous. It's a dangerous song because Jews don't know where to start it. You know, they have no idea. Tony Bennett and Jews do not know where to start songs. They always start them too high because they like the rich melodies. For instance, you're supposed to start Dancing in the Dark somewhere, like here. Dancing in the dark till the tune ends. We're dancing in the dark. Okay, Jews don't start there. Here's where Jews start. Dancing in the dark. Now there's nowhere to go. You're going toward a stroke, toward a burst blood vessel. Dancing in the dark till the tune ends. We're dancing in the dark, and it soon ends, and we can face the music together. Dancing in the. Take him away. Take him into the infirmary. Right. Put something around his head.
You do a thing with when you're doing high anxiety. I think. Was almost as much fun as watching you sing was watching you play with the microphone cord. It seemed to be the great pleasure of just being able to throw it over your shoulder. Yes. Listen,
I have learned that because that is part of the equipment I will need on my way out of show business, Dennis. On my way out, first I go to Yugoslavia and make a bad film. Then I go to England and wear a trench coat in a TV series. Then I play the lounge in Vegas and I need to work the mic cord well. And then I hang around Don Rickles' house because a lot of people in showbiz do come to Don's house, and they might give me a second crack at it, you know. But anyway, I love the Saloon Singer. I like their technique. I love their, you know, they're slick, they're wonderful, and especially when they schlep the cord over their shoulder. I don't know, what are they, truck driver? What do they have to pull? Why can't they just have 10 feet more mic cord and they won't have to pull it over their shoulder? But I like it. I had a lot of fun with the little, you know, dribbling vocal passage in between when I said, "Where you from, pal?" You know, "Hiya, Tex. Where you from, Cincinnati?" You know, I love that on Team Michigan. It goes nowhere. It means nothing.
You waited a long time though to make your singing debut.
Actually, no. I worked in the mountains as a drummer. I had a couple of other musicians work with me, and I would play drums and sing at the same time. I would do songs "Here I am, I'm Melvin Brooks, I've come to stop the show. Just a ham whose minus looks, but in your hearts I'll grow. I'll tell you gags, I'll sing you songs, snappy little happy tunes that roll along. I'm out of my mind, so won't you be kind and please love Melvin Brooks. Yes, take it, please love Melvin Brooks. Boom, stick-a-dick-boom. I used to catch myself. I was the only comic who caught myself on the drums. I couldn't lose. Every time I had a bad joke, I'd catch it. Dig-a-dib-boom. Never wrong.
You were saying, while we were listening to the song play, that it was such a thrill for you to hear the playback. Actually, you know, the movies take such a long time, but a song was a whole different medium for you.
Yeah, you write a movie, and it takes about, if you care about it, you care about, you know, people say Mel Brooks movies are crazy, but they're well crafted. They're carefully written, and they take 7 to 8 months to fashion properly. And when that's finished, there's about 3 or 4 months of pre-production, and 5 hard months of filming, and another 4 or 5 months of editing. And so by the time a film is shown on the screen at the Sutton Theater, where I usually play mine, it's a thrill, but it's not. It's been a long process. When you write a song and 60 musicians in a studio play it and you sing along, like, for instance, the first song I wrote for movies was a song called Springtime for Hitler. And even though the lyric was quite insane, quite anarchic, I was very, very proud of the music. And I was very proud of the fact that it's written in kind of, you know, soaring octaves. It's a very beautiful melody. And every time I hear Springtime for Hitler on Muzak, you know, there are no lyrics that go with it. They don't say U-boats are sailing now. All they see, it's ba 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 wee ba. People in the elevator, you know, they sway back and forth. I mean, I saw a little Jewish lady the other day in 580 Fifth Avenue, the Diamond Building, swaying to Springtime for Hitler. Had she known what she was mamboing to, that woman would have been incensed. But I must tell you that it was a thrill. 65 musicians, boom, playback, and there it was. Tears sprang into my eyes. Not mine, of course. not mine, the producer of the film heard the thing. He cried all over me. But I want to tell you, it was so crowded that even Gentile. You want to play Springtime for Hitler?
I'd love to.
Okay, it's my favorite song.
Germany was having trouble, what a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and gay.
We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race.
Let's put a little life in it.
You now own 20% of Prisoners of Love. Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
You now own 30% of Prisoners of Love. Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
The warden would like to make a little investment in your production.
Tell him he owns 50% of the show.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Sing it out, man. We open in Leavenworth on Saturday night.
Prisoners of love, blue skies above, can't keep our hearts in jail. Prisoners of love, our turtle doves, soon come and round with mail. Oh, you can lock us up and lose the key, but hearts in love are always free.
And that was Springtime for Hitler out of the incredibly twisted mind of Mel Brooks. And this is WNEW-FM New York 102.7 on your dial, Metro Media Stereo.
Oh, that's priceless. This is Dennis Elsis along with Mel Brooks, and we're talking about Mel's new album, which is called Mel Brooks' Greatest Hits, which has soundtrack to High Anxiety and various other films. Now, that was the first Mel Brooks movie, The Producers.
First Mel Brooks movie. I'm a little ashamed of it, but your first,
You're not ashamed of it. I mean, that's probably one of your favorite films, isn't it?
It is. Your firstborn movie is like your firstborn child. I mean, you have a special attachment to it.
Did you have a lot of problems? I mean, Springtime for Hitler, those of us who have seen the film know the humor that's involved with it, but I mean...
I had problems. Jews were mad. Everybody was angry. I can't compare my problems to Adolf Hitler himself, who was at the moment, you know, was dead and very unhappy, I'm sure, about that. You know, the man was in a bunker for 31 days with Eva Braun. I mean, with Goring wasn't fun. Marty Borman was no big comic. Nothing big was happening in the bunker except some tears and German wines. They're too sweet anyway. I mean, what were they doing? Sex was out of the question. It was too dark down there. You might end up with a guy. You know, it's very embarrassing for a Nazi officer. But I want to tell you, it was so crowded in the bunker. Wait a minute. I think I'm going in the wrong direction.
What were the...
Dennis,
really? Now, I mean, weren't you called an anti-Semite and things like that
yes.
for putting Hitler in a movie?
The original title was Springtime for Hitler, and Joseph E. Levine, God bless him, who gave me my start set. The exhibitors will not show it with that title. Come up with another title. I said, you know, I love Springtime for Hitler. You're killing me. This is the best. He said, no, they won't. So I had to come up with the producers. Now, in Sweden, they call it Springtime for Hitler. And every time there's a theater open and empty, they play it. And I make a lot of money from Sweden. I'm going over to push High Anxiety when we open in England and Sweden in May, and I'm making a special visit to Stockholm to convert my money into whatever, you can. Droshkes, I don't know what they got there, but it's no good. All you can get is cream spinach with that kind of money. But I'm very serious that it was about the fact that it was a problem. Everybody was angry. Nobody thought it was very funny. The movie, the producers tried out at the Lane Theater and in Philadelphia, and maybe four people came to the opening, and it was embarrassing. Joe Levine got into a big black car. I said, good night, Joe. No, good night, nothing. In the car, bang, with the crew. And it opened at the Fine Arts Theater in February of 68. It was an instant hit in New York. It never has been a hit in the Boondocks or in Munich. I don't know.
For some reason, it play in Germany?
No. I've had, Young Frankenstein was a very big hit in Germany, very big. But they won't play the producers because of Springtime for Hitler.
And now, years later, it's more than a cult film. I mean, it has recouped, I imagine, all
yes,
of the original.
Yes, it didn't
investments.
Cost much. It cost less than $1 million. And to date, I think it's made $7 or $8 million.
Are there plans to re-release it?
Yes. Mr. Chaykin, Bill Chaykin, who runs AFCO Embassy, called me just the other day and said, are you crazy? How could you leave that in the back of my car? It was rotting all night, the stench of it. I had to pull over to the side. Firemen came with hoses. Well, I don't want to tell you what I did to his car. But anyway, he did say that things were happening with the producers and that... he wanted a reissue of the film, and he thought there was a lot of megabucks still to be garnered, hefty megabucks from the film. I think it's just playing places like Des Moines for the first time. I mean, when have you seen a Buzz Berkeley overhead shot of a swastika before? I mean, it's hard to assimilate, you know what I mean? It's hard to put into your heart.
We will continue with Mel Brooks in just a moment over WNEW-FM in New York.